This is the Genuine Humans podcast, brought to you by Social Element. I'm Tamara Littleton.
And I'm Wendy Christie.
In our podcast, we'll discover the stories of the leaders behind the brands and the trailblazers who are making a real difference in our industry. We'll delve into how they got to where they are today.
And we'll hear about the genuine humans who supported and influenced them along the way.
Welcome back to Genuine Humans. I'm joined by my co-host, Wendy Christie. Wendy, it's lovely to see you again. I feel like I haven't seen you for a little while, actually. That's the joy of summer. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. Thank you. And I've had my head in a spreadsheet for most of today, so I'm extra looking forward to some proper human interaction.
Fabulous. Well, bringing in our next genuine human, I am so delighted that we have Catherine Jensen on our podcast today. Catherine is the Vice President of Customer Experience at Sony Interactive, which, of course, is the home of PlayStation. And we've had the honour of working with Catherine and with PlayStation for many years. But this is a bit of a special episode because it's an opportunity to go behind the scenes of PlayStation. So, Catherine, welcome to the podcast. We're so delighted to have you here.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. And certainly this is something different for me to try. So we'll give it a go here. But I'm really excited to be here.
Fantastic. Well, why don't we just start off with the question that we like to ask our guests. So can you explain a bit more about what it is that you do at Sony, what you're responsible for, but then go backwards, give us a flavor of your career and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. I think so the best way to describe what I do at Sony Interactive Entertainment is all of our after sales activities. So after you've purchased a PlayStation or one of our subscriptions or some of our great games, then my team will offer support to you. And one of the key areas that we support is not only the physical hardware or the digital software, but the online experience that brings both of them together. And that's where online safety comes into play. When I started more than 12 years ago, there really was no online play. Mm-hmm. This was back in the days of MySpace and other types of basic communication that you could try, but nothing the way it is today, where it's real time and it's immersive and you're able to just forge those adventures in your online persona. So within PlayStation, of course, we have a brand purpose, and that's to make sure that everyone has a welcoming place to play and that play has no limits. And online safety is a key part of that. And so my team and I, not only are we always looking at different technology or services that we can provide, but we partner with our groups for extended expertise around human moderation and different types of thought leadership, which is certainly how we work with the Social Element.
Fantastic. And what actually drew you into this space in the first place? Just tell me about, was it a case of sort of like falling into this area, or was it a very sort of clear path that you had in your early career?
So definitely a lot of twists and turns. So I started my career at Siemens Medical Systems. And actually, my undergraduate degree was in computer science. And that seems to be a logical thing to do. I worked in what would now be called IT or different types of information services. But what I learned while I was at Siemens was that you weren't defined by your individual position, you were a community based on your purpose. So it wasn't about me being in IT, it was me working for a company that worked on treating cancer and improving people's lives. And so that connection to service, to wanting to be part of a bigger purpose and a bigger community, had really started me on my career. And ever since then, I've always been in different service organizations. I feel a real connection to representing, you know, the brand purpose, but also to ensure that whether it's a consumer or a customer or a player, that they're getting the most out of the experience that we're offering. And I feel very rewarded by that. After Siemens, I went into high tech, more money, more rules, and I enjoyed it. I started out at PeopleSoft, which was a small company when I joined it. It got bigger, big enough to be purchased by Oracle with more rules and more structure and less creativity. And so I found myself wanting to have that more direct connection with our end customers. And again, when you're in enterprise software, you're serving a business, not the individual consumer. So I had a lot of learning, a lot of success at Oracle and PeopleSoft over 14 years. And I decided to join Intuit. And it just blew my mind because certainly at Siemens, at Oracle, and at PeopleSoft, people are paying millions of dollars for your products or services. Mm-hmm. And it's a profession for them to use your software or your services. And so there's a deep knowledge and understanding. And moving to Intuit, it really was a do-it-yourself, very informal. If people didn't like it, they could go to Costco and get a different solution for $50. And I was like, I've been fired for $50. I was used to having, you know, again, these long relationships with big companies. And it was quite humbling to not only see that, again, there was more choice for the consumer, but that you had to work more at personalization and reaching out to consumers. And again, we all have power as consumers and we all have choice. It just doesn't work that way in business to business so often. So from Intuit, I went into Symantec, and Symantec's a security company. Changed over time, certainly recently, but I was in the enterprise security or endpoint security group, and we offered security services to different companies, both in a forensic aspect, but also in terms of different types of software and other ways that we could ensure that businesses were secure. And at that time, in 2011, Sony was a customer, and Sony experienced a network breach. And so Symantec was brought in to do some support for forensic analysis. What happened? How could we prevent it? And I was so impressed with the people. And it just felt like people who really cared about not only what they were doing, but who they were doing it for. Their purpose was about joy and ways to bring different entertainment to people. And I felt that connection again to a purpose. It wasn't just about the technology or the software or the applications of the software, but it was about the people again. And it got me excited to join. And so I joined in 2012. And back then, again, the internet was still forming. We would not really have online purchases. And if you did, probably your modem would have disconnected three times over the 3 days to try and download something. So very different times back then. So primarily, I supported all of our hardware and devices. And that grew when we launched PlayStation 4 into accounts, and we had an online store. And then this whole area of online interactions, and not only multiplayer, but also player-to-player engagement. And we've grown to current state where we have 150 million online players. And that takes a lot of coordination. We have a global code of conduct, but that's nothing without the ability to enforce, but also the ability for players to choose what's right for them. So from starting out supporting strictly the console to now this whole ecosystem that defines the PlayStation experience has been just a wild and incredible journey. But I don't think I could have been a visionary to see this is how online entertainment would be back when I started at all.
And we're going to go into a little bit more of that sort of behind the scene, but just sort of hearing you say that, it you can see how everything has brought you to exactly where you are now, which I always love to hear, because that's sort of that purpose driven, but also working with the end users as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something that really excites me every day. There's always something that I can serve, always something that I could do better, that I could make people gain more enjoyment from our products. And one of the things that I like to look back on is that really gaming and entertainment, that's somewhat of a luxury or discretionary type of a product. It's so diametrically different from cancer therapy devices to gaming.
Sure.
But at the same time, when we look back on the pandemic and not being able to be face to face, being able to engage in adventures, to connect with your friends, but still be at home became really a way of people keeping their sanity and their connections. And it really did provide just an outlet and an avenue for people to, you know, maintain some of their normalcy of their lives. And I'm very proud of being a part of that.
I couldn't agree more. And I think also, you know, being, I haven't got the time to be as much of a gamer at now, but obviously growing up in and being a gamer, I think it does bring more girls and women into tech as well. I think that's it's such a sort of important part. But that whole time during the pandemic, I couldn't agree more about how it enabled people to connect.
Yeah, I think we've talked about the fact that I'm not a gamer myself. I do play a little, but I'm not a gamer. I'm the mother of gamers.
Mother of dragons, mother of gamers.
And I had two of my daughters miss their graduation during pandemic. Yeah. But yet they were able to connect and have different types of tournaments and different ways that they engaged with their college friends, with their high school friends. And I think if they didn't have that connection when we finally came out of the pandemic, I don't know that they would have had kind of that continuity, starting all over with new friends and re-entering kind of external society and other groups and things like that could have been far more overwhelming than it was if they hadn't have had that kind of online engagement through gaming, something light and fun, but yet providing such a needed service.
Such a good point. Coming back to what Tamara said a few minutes ago about sort of all paths seeming to lead to where you are now, I think it's fair to say for so many of us now, and certainly all of us on this call, none of us would have been able to see our careers coming. I don't think they just didn't exist. So it would be great to explore, you know, even further back, you know, what took you on this journey? What did you see yourself doing when you were a child? What did you think you might want to be when you grew up?
So I am the oldest child in my family, so very bossy. And I thought I would like to be in law enforcement, mostly so that I could tell my mother what to do. And so less altruistic, more power driven. But at the same time, I liked the ability to kind of bring people together, to organize different types of activities. And again, I always thought that our community center, which was just down the street from where I lived, there was a police station and a fire station. And so they were very active in our schools and in our community. And I just felt quite connected and safe. And that was something that I wanted as well.
I can identify with that. And before I did this career, I spent a few years as a road safety officer working with our local police force, so I can identify with that. And were there any people who you particularly looked up to as a child?
So definitely my father. He was a first generation American. Both of his parents immigrated from Russia. Very hard worker, very disciplined, and very driven. And I think that's probably cultural as well. When you're immigrating to a new country, you've got to start things off and really pull yourself up by your bootstraps and just incredibly hardworking. That's also a lot of pressure, right? A lot of pressure to continue to, you know, meet expectations that are so high all the time. And so I definitely looked up to him from a resilience, from a work ethic. I never was successful when I take shortcuts, and he was the first to remind me about that. It's hard work that helps with progress. And so I really admired him. I had a number of teachers throughout both my formative years as well as graduate and postgraduate who were very encouraging. And I was just always impressed on how they could teach at scale. They would have so many different personalities and so many different stages, either in knowledge or in life, and yet they're teaching the same class, the same material, but everybody is learning differently. And that was always incredibly impressive to me. And I've had leaders who've done that as well. Certainly while I was at PeopleSoft and Oracle and Symantec, I had a leader, Dave Hare, who was definitely very invested in my growth and success. And that meant different things at different times. And so I was very lucky to have the freedom there. And I've been working for Eric Lempel here at Sony Interactive for the last 12 years, and very similar, where they're supportive and they offer different types of ideas and mentoring. But they also lead by example, yeah, which is great because I'm able to absorb and adopt, but also adapt what works for me, what will work with my team.
Thank you. Yeah, it's nice to have an opportunity to call out those people who really have given you that support or influenced you. And I'm sure that your name would come up if we were talking to other people on this podcast as well.
And I'm going to bring us back into present day and online safety, because I know that this is a very much a shared passion for us, Catherine, and a huge passion point for you. Can you just describe what the overarching strategy for moderation and communities for PlayStation is? You know, how does it actually all work logistically?
Sure. So as I mentioned, it's grown tremendously over time, but we take a three-point approach to content moderation and online safety. The first one is about control. What type of personalizations or settings can we offer so that you can create the experience that you want to have, whether it is muting or blocking, playing with friends, playing with people with similar interests, parental controls. We want to make sure that, again, you have the capability and the control to set that experience that's right for you. So that's the first thing. Put the hands of the online experience in the hands of the players as much as possible. The second approach is shielding. And how do we make sure that the PlayStation experience is about PlayStation? So we will shield different types of external content. So for example, URLs that might not be appropriate for PlayStation. We have a service that's measuring and blocking those. Profanity filters, text filtering, different types of image filtering and blocking. So we want to shield anything that isn't enriching your gaming experience from you. So first control your experience, then we're going to work on the technology side to shield those external content from coming in. And then finally, we do have a global code of conduct. As you can imagine, with 100 million plus players online, we have some conduct violations. And then that's where the enforcement comes in. We do use technology to identify different types of code of conduct violations, but largely we depend on player support. Players are telling us what's not right for them in terms of the experience and how they felt in that experience. And then we use not only technology, but certainly human moderators to make sure that they're taking contextual information, not just the report, into consideration. And then we'll take action from that. So it's about control, shield, and then enforce in that order. First, put that power in the hands of the player.
And it still blows my mind, just the, was it 100 million players, did you say? And yep, just huge amounts of volume as well. What I love about this is that no one will really have any idea of the scale of the operation behind the scenes and you know, the teams involved in this. And obviously it's all in multiple languages as well.
Yes.
It's a completely global approach. So I'm just curious to know, what are you most proud of in terms of whether it's work or personal? Would you be happy to just share something that makes you proud?
I'll do one work and one personal.
Perfect.
So from a work aspect, I'm incredibly proud of the way that we're talking about online safety, not just within Sony, but within the industry. You know, that I think that just having a conversation about digital civility, about the fact that keyboard warriors can hurt, you know, it's the same sticks and stones, it's just they're virtual now. And I'm really proud to be able to talk about those things and to make sure that we're bringing people's focus on humanity. The things that people say online are things that I hope they would never say to anybody to their face, but it hurts the same. And so by not talking about it, by hiding all of the operations behind the scenes, I think that, you know, perhaps we would do a disservice to allowing that behavior to continue. So I'm really proud of, again, whether it's industry associations, whether it's podcasts or other types of meetings, the more we talk about online safety, I think the more as a community, as a society, we're going to take ownership of our behavior. And we're also going to be free to speak up and say, hey, that's not okay for me.
I couldn't agree more. And then I think, you know, having, because we've been in this industry for so long,
yeah,
we know that there was a lot of collaboration at the beginning. And then I think it's fair to say that sometimes people sort of went off in their own direction and sort of, you know, it was about working out what they did in each individual company. But I know that actually you've been a real fan of the work that we're doing behind the Make Social Better campaign. And it is about sharing knowledge and working directly with platforms as well and with other companies. And yeah, I think things are changing and you've been such a pioneer in this space. And of course your team and Will and so many people in the space. So I'm pleased to see that changing and absolutely that's definitely, you should be very proud.
Yeah. And then personally, I'm just really proud of certainly my family. I'm impressed with what each of my children has been able to accomplish. And I'm excited for the adventures that they'll have. And again, I think that, you know, whatever they continue to do, it's going to have some sort of online component. So I see the work that I've done and the ways that I'm driven to improve online experiences, enhancing their ability to succeed and grow as well.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. So we're going to move on to the part of the podcast now where we get a bit more quickfire and personal and lighthearted. So let's start with hopefully an easy one. What's your idea of a perfect weekend?
Definitely being outdoors and either hiking or sitting on a beach. If I'm hiking, no wine involved. If I'm sitting on a beach, probably with a glass of wine.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And do you have a secret talent?
I am actually making wine.
Oh,
I am
wow.
growing the wine. So it's from vine to glass. And so I have a vineyard of 50 vines, Chardonnay and a few Riesling. And it's something that my husband had originally started, but during COVID, it was something to do. And I got very interested in the whole viticulture and the science of it. So As I progress in terms of quality of taste, I'll definitely be sharing some. But right now, it's more about the process and less about the taste.
Well, I guess I guess it probably takes time, doesn't it, to sort of really learn all.
Yes.
Especially if you're doing that whole process there. So that's fantastic. I love that.
I love that. I have follow up questions as well.
Yes.
Have you actually got as far as doing sort of like special personalized labels for it yet, or is it?
Yes. Yes, I have. So I actually, for my first label, I took a picture of my dog in the vineyard. And then for my second, this year will be my third harvest, but for my second, I took a picture of my dog and my daughter's dog. And I actually had to change the ingredients from instead of 50 Chardonnay, 5 Riesling, I had to put the hair of 3 dogs as well because they're in the vineyard running around. So I've had quite a lot of fun with the labels.
I love that.
I don't know what it says about us that we're so excited about this, but
it's marketers. So actually sticking to the sort of food and drink, what's a food that always reminds you of childhood?
Gosh, a negative food is lamb. I always called it the smell of Catholic guilt because we'd have it when we'd come home from church on Sunday. And a positive is stroganoff. I just remember the long days of cooking it and my grandmother would make it for me and it just felt really comforting.
I'm with you on the lamb. With you on, not for me. How would your friends describe you?
Oh, I think loyal, predictable. I'm pretty stubborn. I think all three of those together would probably be not only how my friends would describe me, but probably my children as well.
I think that that's sound is very self-aware as well.
Yes.
Also, I'm going to pick you up on you saying that you were bossy, actually, because we have to reframe that. That's assertive, not bossy. Now,
I'm okay being bossy. I'm okay with that. But more assertive, spirited, confident.
Yeah.
For sure.
Maybe we can reclaim bossy as well. And what's one of your bucket list travel destinations?
I have been to China many times for work, but I haven't. I feel that I just haven't explored enough about China and in particular, all of the panda reserves out in the Sichuan province or the soldiers up in Xi'an. Those I think I would really like to take more time on a personal kind of trip and really enjoy it and learn more as opposed to a business trip where you're working, in the same old conference room, you could be anywhere in the world and then you head home. So I have some parts of China I'm still very interested in experiencing.
Those business trips can be just fantastic for just giving you that little taster of knowing whether you want to go back and explore more as well.
And so would that involve actually being with the pandas, kind of like helping them on the reserves? Is that the sort of thing you have in mind?
Yes. So there's actually a program called the Panda Keeper, and you can be responsible for taking care of a panda for, I think it's 3 days, and you get training and you shadow one of the keepers and the conservationists. And I just think that would be so interesting.
I might have to add that to my bucket list as well, if that's okay. That sounds amazing. Okay, a different one for you. Do you like karaoke? Do you have a karaoke go-to song?
So, of course, working for Sony, everybody does karaoke when we're in Tokyo. I think liking karaoke is a stretch for me, but my go-to karaoke song is Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Ah, excellent choice. I think I've also got such good memories of PlayStation SingStar as well. That's when I honed my karaoke skills. Wendy, you're nodding at that one as well.
Yeah, a real old favourite for us. I just remember Hopeful Horse? Was that one of the ones that you could get to? One of the levels you could get to? Loved it.
We are experts in our SingStar approach.
Exactly.
Catherine, this has been amazing to have you. I've been wanting, Wendy and I have been wanting you to come on the podcast for ages. I'm so pleased that we're able to make this happen. Thank you for being so open and sort of lifting the lid of what goes on behind the scenes and your own personal journey. Is there anything that we haven't covered, anything that you wished that we had asked you, or do you want to close with any thoughts?
I think the only thing I would say is that too often we don't take time to reflect on whether it's our accomplishments or our learnings, and we don't give each other enough grace that, just like you said, everything has brought us here, and here's a wonderful place to be. And I think if I could tell my younger self to be less self-critical, to be more open to change and maybe not so driven and to know that things would work the way that they should work, and that I'd have such an enjoyable experience, be so rewarded. I wish we talked more about things like that. And so thank you so much for giving me the opportunity, not only to share, but to look back and reflect. And it's been wonderful. Thank you.
You've been listening to Genuine Humans, brought to you by Social Element. If you loved what you heard, remember to rate, review, and subscribe.